It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, welcome to McClifford Podcast. Now, there's been an awful lot of fallout from the riots in Dublin on the 23rd of November. One major issue that's arisen is the resources for the Gardaí. And to that extent, there has been talk of fast-tracking and expanding the use of facial recognition technology, which is a resource for which legislation is currently being prepared. The technology is in use in many countries, but it's also highly controversial. It can identify a suspect in a crime through matching, as I understand it, any known film of that person's face with a database. At least that's how it works in its most primitive form. There are plans to introduce it here in a limited capacity, but both civil liberty groups and organisations representing minorities have grave concerns about it. Just to give you an indication of how useful police forces say that it is, Interpol, which of course is the international police agency, recently claimed that over 1,500 terrorists, criminals, fugitives, persons of interest, or missing persons, as they described them, have been identified since it launched its system in 2016. Last week, the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, said she wanted to expand its proposed use here. Originally, it was to be used only for murder, I think, child abuse, and state security, kind of terrorism-related investigations, excuse me. But now, she also wants it used in cases of rioting. And whatever one thinks about the use of it overall, you couldn't but have a slightly cynical view of that one coming in the wake of the riots for which she is receiving serious flack. So what exactly is facial recognition technology? Will it be a great tool for the Gardaí? And is there anything we should be worried about? Joining me to discuss this is an old journalistic colleague of mine whom I soldiered beside in a tribunal many years ago, Olga Cronin. Olga is now Senior Policy Officer with the Irish Council for Civil Liberties. Olga, you're very welcome.
Hi, Mick. Thank you.
Olga, for starters, and I'd have to say primarily for my benefit in the first instance, will you give us the Idiot's Guide to FRT?
So the Idiot's Guide to FRT, well, essentially a facial recognition technology system is a kind of a guessing gadget, and it's based on probability. And what it tries or what it attempts to do is to match a person's face from a photograph or a video still taken from CCTV against a database of images, like static images, or against live video footage or against recorded footage. So it attempts, and I underline attempts, to determine the identity of an unknown person by comparing their image against a database of images of known individuals. And I suppose, Mick, just to say, like, it's important to say that unlike normal photographs that you and I would know and or normal CCTV, each person's face in all of that imagery goes through a process whereby, I'm trying to keep this to the Idiot's Guide, but what happens is that it goes through a process where there's kind of measurements carried out between, let's say, the distance between your eyes, between your nose and your mouth, and a template, a facial template is created. So when we talk about like trying to identify an image from a base of images or database of images, or that attempt to match it, all the images involved have to go through this processing, this biometric processing. And that's why it's different to, let's say, CCTV. It's different to photographs as you and I know them. And so, for example, in the US, they might, a police officer in a state in the US that might use FRT, there might be a crime, there might be CCTV, they might get an image from that CCTV, and then they would run it against the database of images that they have. And that, in the main, would be driver license photographs or mugshot photographs that they have from when that person was arrested. Now, it sounds very simple and straightforward, but it's not. So I can go into further detail if you want, because they are systems that are, they're riddled with, you know, issues around privacy, but also there's significant issues around bias and accuracy and fairness because of the way that they've been designed and developed and deployed. So when you hear people talking about FRT, having a bias against people who are not male and not white, that's because of how they've been designed. And I can explain that further if you want, but basically these are systems that are predominantly trained on white male faces. And that's why people who are not white and who are not male are much more likely to be misidentified, which is what has happened.
And okay, I can get that, Olga, the white, the white man's burden, as it was once called. But is that because it was designed specifically with white males in mind? Or are there other reasons in the technology why it appears to be more accurate with white males?
It's basically when the systems were designed, Mick, like what these machines need to, the training that they need to kind of go under in order to work is that they need to be trained on faces, right? You're asking a machine to identify a face and to detect a face and identify a face. So you need to feed it loads of images of faces for it to train and to do that. And what happened was when the systems were being created based on these very large data sets of images of people, it was essentially, most of that was probably scraped from the internet. And the most faces on the internet were white and male. And so that's why, you know, time and time again, research has shown that it is people of colour who are in the main largely misidentified. But we also had a case there not long ago where an Irish person, I think he was actually flying out of Budapest. I could be wrong. I think it was Budapest. And he was, you know, at the airport, and the facial recognition system there failed him. I think he was a former Shamrock Rovers mascot. But that's actually a different kind of FRT system. That's where you have a picture on your passport and it's compared against one picture that's taken there and then at the passport check. It's the same when someone uses facial recognition on their phone to open their phone. So you're taking one picture and you're comparing it on one picture that's saved on your phone. But what we're talking about is when you have a picture and you're comparing it to multiple pictures. And that's where the issues are, because that's much more intrusive in terms of how many people are being, you know, brought into the system and how many people could be misidentified, but also how many people could be identified, depending on the circumstances.
Right. And just to check that, as I say, it's slightly idiot's guide, Olga, but just in terms of the technology, just briefly, if you could, that issue, I see your point about the white males in terms of being the predominant image that would be scraped from the internet. But is it not possible with the technology to adapt accordingly for females, for people of colour and what have you, to the extent that it was with white males at this stage of the evolution of the technology?
I don't think it's that simple, but you make the point. I think you're making the point. Can we not just make it better? And if we make it better, surely everything will be okay.
Well, from that perspective, from the perspective of minorities have you, you know.
Well, the thing is that, you know, it's not just maybe even the algorithm in terms of, you know, or the training set under which the technology was trained on. But there's a load of, if you think of FRT, if you think of an FRT search, there's several steps, right? And at each of those steps, there is room for risk and error. There is room for misidentification and there is room for that infringement of rights. So first of all, you have your query image or probe image. So that's the image that you have and you want to identify someone against a database, right? So the questions you have to think of there is like, where did that image come from? Was it scraped from the internet? And was it taken from CCTV? Was it taken from a body-worn camera? You know, how old is the image? Was it legally obtained? Was it legally processed? You know, what's the quality of that? Is the person looking at the camera straight on? Is it to the side? Are they wearing sunglasses, a hoodie? You know, all of these things. Who had access to the image before it was used or, you know, created? That's the first step. So that's just a load of questions over that. And then when you look at the database and all the images that are within that, how were those images compiled? You know, were there clear and objective and kind of limited criteria with regard to that database? Was there a fundamental rights risk assessment carried out in respect of everyone who's in that database? Where did those images come from? You know, were they sourced from the criminal justice system? A load of questions in regards to that. And also all the other questions about, like, you know, the quality of the imagery, the quality of the images, were people's faces covered in any way? You know, so all of those questions, the same as the first photograph in terms of like the quality of the image. And then, you know, in America, this is just worth mentioning, you know, because of all of these kind of gadgets that are put forward as a tool of, you know, convenience and speed and efficiency. And we've seen in the States where research has shown that in New York, you know, where the police there would use FRT, that they are allowed to like edit probe images. So let's say you have an image and you do a search and nothing comes back and you decide, oh, well, maybe I'll take out his, maybe he's frowning or maybe he's smiling or maybe there's something missing.
Right.
They literally have done the following, where they will Google a set of eyes and change the eyes or Google an expression and switch out the expression into the probe photograph.
And is that legal, Olga?
It is legal in New York for this, for the New York Department's FRT section. So, for example, there was one scenario where there was a pixelated CCTV image that they wanted to run a search against their database. And they didn't get anything coming back. They didn't get any candidates with a probability score coming back, which is what actually happens. So it's not like the system spits out one person. It spits out many with a probability score. So that's what I was saying. It's a kind of a guessing gadget. But in this scenario, there was one situation where they were like, you know what, that guy looks like Woody Harrelson. So what they did is they ran a picture of Woody Harrelson against the database. And then they subsequently arrested a man because they felt that the suspect matched this person, you know? So there's that. And then you get into the algorithmic search, which is what I was talking about there in terms of how these systems have been developed. And the fact that they have been developed and designed in such a way that they just have these biases. They're just inherently flawed in that way. And the thing is that it's not that there is just one FRT system, and it's not that there is just one FRT algorithm. There are many. And because there's such, you know, private companies and what we kind of call the black box problem, it's very, very difficult to really get to grips with how accurate they actually are and what they actually are doing. You know, there was a case.
Okay, but there was, as I understand it, there was a major study recently that suggested the accuracy level was around 89%.
So what I would say to you is, okay, so what system was 89%? Because there's many FRT systems, and also were those results from like in a kind of lab context or an operational context? And also the questions you would ask would be, well, what pictures were used in that test? Were they pictures of perfect straight-on images of a person who was looking directly at the camera with perfect lighting and nothing obstructing their face? Was that because a lot of the testing and the figures that are put out about being so accurate, they do involve testing of like perfect lab conditions. And it's not like what many would call in the wild, you know, CCTV, because once you kind of introduce all those other factors, all those normal everyday factors, that the accuracy rate would drop down significantly. But also, there may be a study out there saying, oh, it's 89%, but I would say to you, there are many, many other FRT systems, and we don't know the conditions under which that testing was done. And also, you know, there was a court case, a significant court case in the UK a couple of years ago, the Ed Bridges case, and the court there found that, you know, the South Wales Police could not satisfy themselves that the tool that they were using was non-discriminatory. Because they couldn't essentially test the algorithm themselves, but the court said that's not good enough, you know. So that's where we're at with those kind of tools in terms of like transparency and accountability, because it's very, very difficult to get the facts around those because of proprietary interests, etc.
Right, and I think I'm curious about, Olga, in the event of I'm capturing the CCTV, they match it with the FRT. And notwithstanding, let's say it comes up accurate and whatever questions there are about that, can I then, as a suspect, be convicted of the crime that's at issue on the basis of that match alone?
Well, you would like to think that that doesn't happen, of course, right? I mean, like a guard or any police officer would have to, you know, go through a different, or go through many steps before they could get charges brought before the person.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying in terms of that being the crucial piece of evidence. For example, you could be you could be convicted on DNA evidence alone, yeah. and that has happened. You know, I'm just wondering what strength does it have in that regard in terms of criminal justice systems.
Well, I suppose that would depend on the court and the judge. But I mean, I think that's a very fair question. But I mean, what we're seeing in the States is we're seeing black people being misidentified, arrested, questioned, held, and then let go because they come to the conclusion, OK, we've got the wrong person. The computer actually got us wrong. And, you know, a lot of the times people will say, well, look, it's never going to get that bad because we get these candidates with probability scores. We have a human in the loop. They're looking at it and they're kind of making a decision as to whether the person is that person. And so that's OK. But it's not OK because there have been cases where, you know, there was a man by the name of Michael Oliver. He had a face tattoo and he was arrested and detained for, I think it was 3 days in Detroit after an FRT search. And even though he had no face tattoo he had the face tattoo, but the suspect in the image had a face tattoo. And there was another case where Randall Reed, he was arrested in jail for 6 days after facial recognition, wrongly identified him for stealing a purse, and he had a mole in his face and he was 40 pounds lighter than the actual subject. So the kind of, you know, this idea that a human in the loop will kind of ensure that nothing bad happens isn't watertight because, yeah. As you know, adults will generally go along with what the computer says. You know, it's kind of that confirmation bias issue there, you know. But I should say, make it like, I know we're focusing kind of accuracy and everything, but the other side of it is that, like, and you mentioned, you kind of hinted at it earlier, like if we had systems that were based on or trained on data sets that had more, you know, was representative, let's say, of the demographic upon which the tools were being used. I think I would say that if the technology was 100% right all of the time, that's a whole other ballgame. And that's actually, we're in a way worse scenario then, because we're at the real risk then of a surveillance state, because no matter who you are, you know, we all want to just walk down the street and not feel like we're being identified and tracked. And with, you know, a gadget such as this, if it was to work 100% of the time, which it doesn't, but if it was, I think then we'd be extinguishing that, you know, that normal desire to just be, to go about your daily life unwatched, without being tracked.
Absolutely. And the one thing that occurs to me there is, completely take that point. However, we are living in a time where private companies for profit are all but surveilling us the whole time. I'm talking about our habits, our likes, our dislikes, etc. The whole thing. They have a handle on practically everything and they're just doing it for profit. They're not doing it in the interests of the state, and the state ultimately represents us all. But I take your point there at the same time.
I just would push back a small little bit just there. I mean, because it's a totally fair point, right? And a lot of people would say, but sure, it doesn't matter. Like, Google knows everything about me anyway. But that's, like, we, first of all, Google shouldn't know everything about us, but there's an element of consent on our part when we sign up to things and we do things and we give our data. But like, we do live in a jurisdiction where we have the GDPR and there are very, very strict rules around that. And we also have an access to remedy when those rules aren't complied with. But there is a very big difference between us consenting to a private company for a tool or for access to a service, and we give them that data, and there's a contract there. Whereas what we're talking about is a very, very powerful, dangerous and faulty, powerful surveillance tool in the hands of the state, which would shift the power dynamic between civilians and the guards if it was in their hands. And so I just think there's a distinction there that should just be made, and we should be conscious of that. Yeah.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I was talking more de facto. Like, you're right. We have we do sign up, and we have legal rights to redress. But the reality for most of us, we have the right not to be part of it. But the reality for most of us is we unconsciously end up part of it. But I do take the distinction there. To be fair.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, Drew Harris, commissioner, was in front of the Justice Oireachtas Committee this week, and he was questioned high and low about the riots and the Garda's reaction to it, and the issue of facial recognition technology came up. And his response was that there has been serious distortion over its proposed use. He says that the Gardaí only wanted to retrospectively view footage as opposed to any live viewing, which would come under, as you were describing, Olga, the surveillance, which does occur, as I understand it, in some US cities, but they're not proposing to have it here. And I'd love to know this distinction. He says it's not facial recognition technology, but facial identification. Do you know the difference between those? I don't.
Well, I would join you, Mick, and I would say that we are also kind of at a loss as to what's going on. You know, there's been a bit of a long road with this. It was May 2022 when the Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, announced that she wanted to bring in live and retrospective facial recognition technology. It was announced just around the time of the GRA conference in 2022.
Yes, live and retrospective?
Live and retrospective use of FRT.
Right.
And ICCL pushed back, Digital Rights Ireland pushed back, a number of academics in like technology, law, computer science pushed back, cybersecurity pushed back.
And the Green Party.
And the Green Party, absolutely. And the UN. There was four UN special rapporteurs came out and asked the government to abandon their plans. And in the response to the four UN special rapporteurs, I think it was Simon Coveney actually responded and said, no, no, we don't want live facial recognition technology, but we want real-time facial recognition technology. So in our view, again, the words, I mean, they're absolutely interchangeable.
What's the difference between live and real-time?
Exactly. So there was that piece. And then, yes, there was opposition from us and obviously significantly from the Green Party and other parties, but significantly the Green Party. And then there was an announcement finally just in the summer that, yes, we don't want to use live facial recognition. We just want to use retrospective and we want to use it in these limited circumstances. Now, bear in mind, that was June of this year, if I remember correctly. But there was a whole year there where there was absolutely nothing put down in paper. There was no details. There was no outline really at all of what they were planning to do. And really, from our perspective, we were just kind of swinging from media interview to media interview and like on the words of the minister or on the words of the Garda commissioner to try and understand what they wanted to do. We did have engagement with the Department of Justice, but it was still very unclear what they wanted to do and what images they would be choosing to use, what database they would be using it against, in what circumstances they would be using it. But like I said, yes, in June, then they came out with a statement saying it would be retrospective in these limited circumstances. Very much welcome that they dropped the live element of it. But I should explain, yes, live facial recognition technology is when you kind of run this algorithm through CCTV that's live, right? But retrospective is recorded. Retrospective could be 2 minutes after live. So the intrusiveness and how it could change or how it could impact people to change their behaviour if they know that footage via CCTV cameras could be used in an FRT search, that could change people's behaviour. People could decide, you know what, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want my biometric data to be processed or whichever. So the intrusiveness, while it sounds a lot less intrusive, it's still extremely intrusive, depending on the circumstances. So, for example, you know, people may want to, they might want to protest, they just want to go about their day. But We need to be careful about that kind of retrospective piece being less dangerous. Like, even the European Parliamentary Research Service had made the point that with so much recorded material out there now, in fact, you could identify and track a person's movements a lot more through retrospective than through live, because there will always be more recorded material than live material, if you know what I mean. So I don't. So from our perspective, anyway, it's not that retrospective is you know, FRT light, if you like. It's not. It's
right,
not.
Right. Yeah. No, and the other element to it, Olga, is okay. The minister, this little announcement today about using it in riots and public order, but just briefly, we put that aside. Let's take a leap and suggest that may well disappear again once the heat's off. But in general terms, they're talking about cases. Only you're talking around, as I understand it, murder, possibly child abuse and rape and security related offences, which would be terrorism. Now, they're all very serious crimes, and they're not the kind of thing that, you know, we spoke about live, and you could have a protest, you could have a gathering, whatever. They're not the kind of thing that where people who are not involved in very serious crimes could get mixed up in. I mean, confining it to those kind of categories, is that not a positive thing?
At the backdrop of all of this, Mick, is the discussions at the EU level. There is an Artificial Intelligence Act being thrashed out at the moment, and that will have an impact on what we can and cannot do when it comes to facial recognition technology. And it's in trilogues at the moment, so the three institutions are thrashing it out. But a couple of months ago, the European Parliament voted to have live facial recognition completely banned, and it did allow for retrospective in certain circumstances, or it did allow for that. So those in those limited circumstances. So those discussions are being had, and we will see kind of where they land. But I would still kind of say that, you know, I would still say that we really kind of need to see the evidence of why we should be bringing this tool into the Irish policing context. Because tools are often brought in for certain circumstances, and circumstances where, you know, it's, you know, you can, yeah, you could maybe understand that there's an impulse to say, you know what, that's a situation where a tool should be used. But the slippery slope argument is a real thing. Like, for example, we just saw the slippery slope situation begin because of that announcement the other day that we'll bring it in for violent disorder. So we're not even on the slope and we're sliding down it. So, you know, just to go back to the point about the distortion, because I meant to make it and I didn't make it. Since May 2022, all we've been hearing about is facial recognition technology, not facial identification. And also the name of the proposed bill coming forth is the Facial Recognition Technology Bill. So I just wanted to make that point.
So the distortion might be coming from somewhere else. Yeah, and I take your point, Olga, about the slippery slope. But I mean, all of these things societal-wise are a balance of interests. And at this stage of the kind of evolution of technology, the capacity for police forces to do their job, the desire on the part of the general public that the police forces have the best chance to do their job. You know, it strikes me that the ICCL's position, and that it should be said of dozens of organisations, including organisations representing minorities, the notion that you don't use it at all on those bases is pretty extreme too.
Some may feel that way, yeah. I mean, I think, like I said, you know, whenever, so I suppose, like, Mick, you know, it comes back to this idea that if you're going to have a tool of surveillance and you want to bring it in and it's going to be so intrusive, especially a tool like a gadget like this that is faulty and dangerous, and the impact that it can have on people's lives is severe, you better come with the evidence to show that it will do what it says it will do. And and from a human rights perspective, of course, like, the police have an obligation, a positive obligation, to keep people safe and to solve crimes. But everything has to be, the tools that they use have to be proportionate, and they do have to be the least intrusive, and they do have to be effective. And if they're not effective, let's say, then, you know, the whole the whole argument or the whole even debate about necessity and proportionality melts away. But all of those principles have to be complied with, and we have to see the evidence and the proof to show that they are being complied with. And the problem with FRT is that because of its black box nature and the difficulties in really getting to understand how they work in, you know, in operationally, it's not clear to us, and it's not clear to many in other jurisdictions, because we've seen it be banned in jurisdictions. It's not clear that there are the risks presented are so high that they can be curbed by regulations or through safeguards. And, you know, this is a very, to bring FRT in, you know, 2023, it's been used in other jurisdictions for several years, but only in New Jersey, in a court case just in the summer, the court there even referred to it as a novel and untested technology, you know? So I would say we have to see the evidence to see why it would be necessary in Irish policing, because I don't think that we have to do what other jurisdictions do all the time. And I think as well, like, I think that many people in Ireland who just want to go about their days and who of course want police to be, the guards to be able to do their jobs, I think that they should have a say in this, you know, and they do have a say in it. And I think when the bill comes out that they should engage with it, because we have to remember, you know, when the desire to bring in FRT into Irish policing was first announced in May 2022, it was going to be slipped in by way of an amendment to a bill that had already pretty much passed pre-legislative scrutiny. So there wasn't going to be any public discussion, democratic debate around it. There wasn't going to be the opportunity for people to go before an Oireachtas committee and to say, listen, this is really a massive, you know, step change in Irish society. And so I would kind of encourage people to get involved and to engage with the debate and engage with the bill when it does come out, and have your say on it. Because it would be such a big change in Irish society to bring this into Irish police. And we really have to ask ourselves, do we really want it? Especially when, as I said, it's pretty novel and untested. It's pretty young. And when we start using these things, there is the slippery slope. It does happen. And it's hard to bring it back.
The point about the amendment is well made. There's a sad history in, particularly in the area of criminal justice, I think. There's a sad history, particularly in the area of criminal justice, in slipping things in through amendments. And I think it was some concerns expressed by the Green Party ensured that they would then have a separate bill for this on its own. One final thing, Olga. What about oversight? In the event if there's a system of robust oversight, would that ease any fears?
I suppose what would that look like, you know? Oversight of... Well, first of all, the training data that underpins the algorithm, how that works and how that has been tested.
I'm talking about oversight now. Like, for instance, you're a High Court judge who was applied to it. Now, obviously, you'd want a lot of technology advice and what have you, but do you know what I mean? I mean, robust oversight that there isn't, we've developed in other areas, for instance.
Well, I mean, I think a judge to have to agree to it or to have to allow it would be a significant safeguard. But at the same time, would the judge be made aware of all these issues in regards to the technology? You know, a lot of times, you know, like facial recognition technology is continually presented as this magic bullet, you know, but when you break it down, there are so many areas for room for error, room for misidentification. And those elements would have to be made very, very clear, you know. And like I said, because it's such a new technology, it's not clear that, you know, everyone would be aware of all of those issues.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It looks like the government is intent on pushing forward in one form or another. And I think the point you make, Olga, is extremely well made, that everybody should educate themselves on it and be satisfied that they're happy or otherwise that it is coming in. But it's definitely something that requires public awareness, and therefore implied anyway, public consent one way or the other. But we'll see how that goes. We may well come back to it. Olga, thank you very much for joining us today. That's Olga Cronin, Senior Policy Officer at the Irish Council for Civil Liberties. Thanks, Olga.
Thanks, Mick.
As always, I want to thank engineer JJ Vernon. Thank you, folks, for listening. Hang in there, and we'll be back with you again next week. Take it easy.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.